I'd hardly expected Kitty to swagger to Whitstable in her suit and her topper and her lavender gloves. But even so, when she stepped from the train and I saw that she was clad as a girl and walked like a girl, with her plait fastened to the back of her head and a parasol over her arm, I felt a little pang of disappointment. This swiftly turned, however, as always, to desire, and then to pride, for she looked terribly smart and handsome on that dusty Whitstable platform. She kissed my cheek when I went up to her and took my arm and let me lead her from the station to our house across the seafront. She said, "Well, and this is where you were born and grew up." "Oh, yes. Look there, that building beside the church is our old school. Over there, see that house with the bicycle by the gate? That's where my cousins live. Here, look on this step. I once fell down and cut my chin, and my sister held her handkerchief to it the whole way home." So I talked and pointed, and Kitty nodded, biting her lip. "How lucky you are," she said at last. And as she said it, she seemed to sigh. I had feared that the afternoon would be dismal and hard. In fact, it was merry. Kitty shook hands with everyone and had a word for them all, such as, "You must be Davy, who works in the smack," and "You must be Alice, who Nancy talks about so often and is so proud of. Now I can see why." Which made Alice blush and look to the floor in confusion. With my father, she was kind. "Well, well, Miss Butler," he said when he took her hand, nodding at her skirts. "This is rather a change, ain't it, from your usual gear?" She smiled and said it was. And when he added with a wink, "And something of an improvement, too, if you don't mind a gentleman saying so." She laughed and said that since gentlemen were usually of that opinion, she was quite used to it and did not mind a bit. All in all, she made herself so pleasant and answered their questions about herself and the music hall so sweetly and cleverly that no one, not...